Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, a big game coming up Sunday afternoon at Lambeau Field, 3:25 p.m. Central Time kickoff. The Packers against the Seahawks. And, you know, if you look at rivalries in the NFL, there aren't too many non-divisional rivalries that are maybe as good as this one, Packers-Seahawks, dating back obviously to the Fail Mary in 2012. You have the NFC Championship game in 2014, the season opener in 2014 right. That preceded that, had an early season primetime Sunday night game in 2015. A lot of good football between these two teams and a lot at stake coming up here Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of those games, too. It's interesting. As you kind of pointed out, when two teams see each other as often as the Packers and the Seahawks do outside of their division, it happens occasionally. You'll do see this happen. But I think the thing that's most impressive about the series is it's a fleeting star league where you get teams that rise and fall almost on a yearly basis. These have been two of the biggest constants in the NFL, and they've really been having that juxtaposition and that battling, that gridlock here for a number of years. The Packers were able to snap that three-game losing streak to the Seahawks last year at Lambeau Field, and now with Seattle coming back, I'm sure they want to keep that going.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you look at what's at stake here for Green Bay, not to say that nothing mathematically is going to happen to the season one way or the other, depending on the outcome of this game, but there's obviously a lot riding on this for Green Bay, being two games back in the division, still trying to catch some teams in the wild card chase, all of that. I don't know if we've had a regular season game to this level of importance for the Packers, maybe since the finale in 2013 in Chicago, where the division title and a playoff berth was on the line. Because yeah, in 2014 and 2015, you had the division title on the line at the very end of the season. But in both of those instances, the Packers were already in the playoffs, yeah. Win or lose. It was just a matter of what seed, you know, what the positioning was going to be. This game is about as big as it gets in the regular season. First really big one in a long time.
Yeah, it is. At the same time, what I find that's really interesting about it, there was a number of years where the discussion was, how many people in this locker room had been to the Super Bowl and they know what it feels like? Well, on the other side of it now, they have you only have 9 or 10 guys left from that Super Bowl team in 2010, but you have a lot of guys from that 2013 team that were playing for basically their playoff lives for the better half of the second half of that season.
Yeah,
I think back to that game against Dallas that they had at Cowboys Stadium, and you know, hopefully for the Packers' sake, they don't go down as far as they did in Dallas 3 years ago. But that was kind of one of those games where the Packers had a little bit of momentum going in their way, but they really needed that win to be able to make a legitimate case at their playoff hopes. I think this team's in a better place than they were but at that time. But I just think of, you know, David Bakhtiari and all these guys that have been a part of those teams and in knowing what it's like when your season's on the line. I think this is a really veteran group, and they know what it's like to be in this situation and how to persevere through it.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll have to see as Sunday rolls around what the weather has in store. We had our first yeah. really significant weather game this past Sunday with the wet snow and whatnot, the temperatures right around the freezing mark at Lambeau Field. Sounds like it could be a little bit chillier this weekend and possibly some snow in the forecast as well. And, of course, not necessarily part of the current rivalry we're talking about with the Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers Packers, but the 2007 playoff game, the big snow globe here at Lambeau Field between the Packers and the Seahawks. It would be neat if there were sort of a recreation of that maybe on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I'll say this. I don't want any more of those games like they had against the Texans. After the game, trying to go out and walk in that and not slip and fall. I don't know how professional athletes were able to play in those conditions. I mean, 32 degrees right at the freezing point. It was a really unique situation. Usually when you get snow in Green Bay, it's a little bit cooler than that, so it just kind of stays. It just is sort of a substance. Well, this, it was kind of like half melting. So to your point about how the conditions could be on Sunday, I don't think we're going to see another game like that again that they had against Houston for a while, just with how the season goes. But it could be another thing where the Packers have to really pull themselves together and understand that these are the elements that we need to play in and we need to play well in, and take those experiences, especially the new guys from that game against the Texans, and try to, you know, use that to build upon against Seattle.
Yeah, and in terms of the NFC North standings, the Packers currently at 6-6, tied for second with the Vikings, 2 games behind the Lions, who are 8-4. Now, the Lions are hosting the Chicago Bears, the last place team in the division. The Bears are coming off a victory, but you have to believe the Lions hold serve at home and get their 9th victory. So if you're the Packers, you're looking at trying to stay just 2 games back of the Lions, then with 3 left to play, if you can beat the Seahawks. If the Lions win and the Packers lose, you're 3 back with 3 to go, and your season is really in dire straits.
You know, and another point, too, though, that's really interesting is even if the Lions win and the Packers can win this game against Seattle, well, suddenly you're back above 500, and then you have the Bears coming up on the horizon. So you're in that playoff hunt one way or another, whether it's the division or the wild card. But to get there, you need to keep winning ball games.
Yeah, for sure. And we've got more to talk about here about this Seahawks team. They're leading the NFC West and looking pretty impressive. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkiewicz there. And Wes, as I mentioned before the last break, the Seahawks leading the NFC West, very much in control of that division, certainly headed to the playoffs, really playing for what it appears to be the number 2 seed in the NFC and a first-round bye, with Dallas obviously posting the best record in the conference so far. The biggest news out of Seattle heading into this game is the season-ending injury to Earl Thomas, the Pro Bowl safety from last Sunday night's game, a nasty injury, unfortunately, a broken tibia, sort of a mid-air collision as he was trying to make an interception there against the Panthers. What's your sense of how much losing Earl Thomas in that secondary, the Legion of Boom, as it's called, what's the impact?
Well, we saw last year at Lambeau Field what the Seattle defense looked like when they didn't have Cam Chancellor on the field, and Earl Thomas was the main guy there. He had to step up. Now it's going to be very similar. Chancellor needs to step up because the young man that's stepping in for Thomas, Stephen Terrell, has only made one career start previous to that, a former undrafted free agent. Definitely doesn't have the same pedigree and credentials as Thomas. But also from the leadership standpoint, I mean, that's a veteran group. They have a lot of guys that have played a lot of football together for a very long time. But Earl Thomas is kind of the constant. He's sort of the unwavering one. He doesn't draw a lot of attention. He's not the guy that's making headlines, but he's probably the best safety in the NFL, or at least in the top 5 conversation at that position. And in the Legion of Boom certainly is a moniker that they rightfully deserve. So that's going to be a big challenge for them. But at the same time, I still think they have the best inside linebacker combination in the NFL. When you look at Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, Michael Bennett has been impactful for years now. So there's still a lot of guys you have to concern yourself with if you're the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, this is an ultra-talented defense. Even just looking at the secondary, you mentioned Cam Chancellor. You've also got Richard Sherman. Those two guys have combined for, I believe, 6 of the 11 interceptions.
Correct.
For that defense. And then you look at the defensive front 7. Bobby Wagner, one of the best linebackers in the league. Cliff Averill, I believe, has 10 sacks on the season.
4 forced fumbles as well.
Yeah, wow. So double-digit sacks for him. And you mentioned Michael Bennett, a guy who has really kind of given the Packers offensive line some problems over the years. There's a lot of talent, as you said, a lot of veteran talent on this defense. Certainly a unit that's capable of absorbing the loss of one player. If there's anything that works to the Packers' advantage, you might say, with the absence of Thomas, it's that this will be the first game, you know, without him, where they're trying to make those adjustments. So maybe, just maybe, the Packers can find something to take advantage of before the Seahawks quite get, you know, their whole feel back with their defense without number 29 in the back end.
Yeah, there's going to be a feeling up process with that for sure, because, you know, when you look at Chancellor, he's going to have to get used to playing with Terrell. They're really going to have to figure out, you know, they always hear so often, you hear Morgan Burnett talk about how that safety position is really the quarterback of the defense and in understanding how they fit into the communication of things, that's a big area too that he's going to have to, they'll have to make up for. But getting back to what you said about the defensive front, though, John Snyder, obviously from DePeer, former Packers executive, has been now in Seattle, I think, for 7 years. The signing of Cliff Averill, I think, kind of parallels what the Packers did with Julius Peppers a number of years ago. Now, Peppers, obviously, is an older pass rusher than Averill, but he's had some impressive seasons with Seattle. Like you said, 10 sacks this season, but, I mean, when you look at his career totals, I think he's already up, like, near 35 during his 4 seasons in Seattle. So he's been a really nice complimentary pass rusher to Michael Bennett. Those guys are probably going to be where it starts for Seattle. They know they're going to have to make up for some things in the secondary. If you can increase the pass rush, they have two really active tacklers in Wagner and Wright that are leading them in tackles this season. Shows you how effective they are in the trenches. That front seven for them is really going to be paramount now without Thomas kind of as the safety valve in the back end.
Yeah, a lot of speed and power, you might say, both with regards to this defensive front and talent enough to let a good pass rusher, productive pass rusher like Bruce Irvin, leave in free agency, and they don't seem to have missed a beat as far as the heat they put on quarterbacks and the difficulties they can cause. This defense has let's face it, it's set the standard for the last handful of years in the NFC. I think initially, maybe in this decade, it was that 49ers defense was the one that rose to prominence first, and then these Seahawks came right behind them. And the Seahawks, to their credit, I think have maintained their defensive prominence longer.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing, is that the way that Snyder built it. And nothing against what Trent Baalke did and what the 49ers accomplished. They built a really strong, one of the most dominant defenses we've seen for, you know, that window that they had.
Yeah.
But it was built upon a lot of veteran leadership and a lot of, you know, free agent guys. They built this team in Seattle through the draft. You look at the 2011 NFL draft. I did some research on this, you know, earlier this year. That was a really sparse draft for a lot of teams, the NFL. Seattle made hay that day.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a lot of playmakers out of that draft, and that is really what set the table for them having this run and being able to sustain it, extend guys, find guys that can fit in to the other guys that you can't re-sign. John Snyder built this team to last.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll switch gears and talk a little bit about the Seattle Seahawks offense when we come back after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, when you talk about the Seattle Seahawks offense, it obviously starts with quarterback Russell Wilson.
Right.
And he, in my view, is one of the best dual threat, I'll almost even say triple threat quarterbacks in the NFL right now, because he's a very efficient passer. He can flat out run the ball with read option looks and actually designed running plays that they will run for him sometimes. And then he's also dangerous as a scrambler when the play breaks down. He can be his own best friend in that respect when there isn't anybody to throw to. This guy is he's a handful. He's tough to contain, and I'll be curious to see just how the Packers go about handling him, and maybe what the conditions in the winter weather here present Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, he was kind of Dak Prescott before Dak Prescott was Dak Prescott. Different type of quarterbacks, but just mid-round guys that completely took the league by storm. I love that story that you often hear about John Snyder when he was trying to convince Pete Carroll about, you know, them taking him in the third round and what he saw as his upside, because he is. I mean, that the big story with him back in 2000, that draft was, you know, is he big enough to be a quarterback?
Yeah, it was all about the size. Yep.
Well, the way it turned out, he can throw it when he needs to from the pocket, but most of the time he also can get outside, extend plays, much like Aaron Rodgers. The interesting thing for Seattle, because we see it all the time in our insider inbox, Mike, is that finding an identity. What's the Packers' offensive identity? It's always changing, not only in Green Bay, but everywhere in the NFL. And I think Seattle's kind of gone through that a little bit as well this year without Marshawn Lynch. Thomas Rawls having the hamstring injury that kept him out at the beginning half of the season.
Right.
And then you look at the way that this offense is constructed, trying to figure out how Jimmy Graham fits. It's been a feeling out process for the Seahawks as well. But now that Rawls is back, it seems like Jimmy Graham is kind of clicking in this offense. Russell Wilson is finding a way to make all these pieces fit, and they are obviously starting to peak at the right time.
Yeah, Rawls is the guy that they're leaning on with their ground game now. Christian Michael, statistically, with the Packers actually is the Seahawks' leading rusher, both in yardage and rushing touchdowns for 2016. But Rawls had a pretty big game against the Carolina Panthers last Sunday night, left the game due to the concussion protocol, then was actually cleared before the end of the game as far as we understand. So there doesn't appear to be an injury issue with Rawls. And the Seahawks certainly, you mentioned, you know, with Marshawn Lynch, they like to run the football. They don't want to be a one-dimensional team.
Right.
As good as Russell Wilson is, they do not want to be a one-dimensional team. And Thomas Rawls will be a pretty tough customer come Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it was funny. You know, during their Super Bowl runs, the thing I always said that Seattle was unlike any other NFL team because they had a thunder and lightning combination, but it was their running back and their quarterback.
Yeah.
Kind of the two that were complementing each other.
Yeah.
Rawls is a different type of running back than Lynch was. He's shorter, you know, and obviously a little lighter, but he's quick. And it showed last year when Lynch was dealing with all the injuries that he was, that Rawls could potentially be that guy, you know, a former undrafted free agent out of Central Michigan. The Seahawks doing their... they're scouting out in Michigan, getting that done.
No question.
But a really talented young man. Now, the thing that's interesting, when they did cut Michael, they had a lot of young guys at that position as well. Two draft picks, I think, also there. So they feel good about that group. But now that Rawls is back, I'm sure there's an added sense of comfort for Wilson, who statistically, it's interesting, when you look at his stats this year, only 12 touchdowns,
yep.
93 passer rating, which is rather pedestrian for 2016, but still a really dynamic player and a guy that can certainly hurt you if you let him.
Yeah, and when you look at his weapons in the passing game, Doug Baldwin and tight end Jimmy Graham are really his two main guys.
Yeah.
They've combined, I believe, for 10 of Russell Wilson's 12 passing touchdowns this year. Graham is the one. I take nothing away from Doug Baldwin. He's developed into one heck of a player in this league, and a guy who a lot of people a few years ago never envisioned as a number one wide receiver, but he is a true number one. But Jimmy Graham, I think, is the guy, when you look at the Packers defense, that probably scares you the most, just because of the tight ends over the last month and a half that have made some big plays against Green Bay and have really been tough for Green Bay to stop. And as you mentioned, the Seahawks have gone through a little bit of a feeling out process with Jimmy Graham and fitting him into this offense. But boy, he's an explosive player.
Yeah, it's funny. If you actually go, his statistically lowest performance of his career so far with Seattle was against Green Bay. Last year in week two, one catch for 11 yards. I don't know what the secret was to being able to contain him in that one, but the Packers were able to kind of take him out of it. That is going to be the emphasis. He is primary objective number one in this game, because we've seen this season how opposing offenses can have success with those tight ends at times. But the Packers are getting deeper in their secondary. They're getting healthier. They're getting more of those weapons back. One more thing to touch on, Mike. The biggest area that the Packers have to take advantage of, though, is the offensive line. That's the one kind of universal weakness for Seattle. It was that way last year. They've gotten better, but that's still an area where they need to be able to get some pass rush going. The teams that have been successful this year against Seattle have been able to put pressure on Russell Wilson, 29 sacks so far this season.
Yeah, and we've seen a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde, you might say, with that unit. The last two times the Seahawks have been on the road, they won a huge game in New England where their offensive line played fantastic. Then the line fell apart
right.
a couple weeks ago at Tampa Bay, and they lost 14-5. But we'll be able to talk about that more as the week goes on. Before we go, a little sponsor business, Wes. At home or here in the stands, we all know that Green Bay fans give it their all. That takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious chunky chicken broccoli cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, before we go, We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Packers nominee for Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year. Every team has one nominated player, and for Green Bay this year, it's outside linebacker Jayrone Elliott, third-year player out of Toledo. You and I both know him quite well, but mostly because he's such a nice guy and he's always willing to talk to just about anybody who wants to strike up a conversation. And his involvement in the community and everything, they don't get too much better than Jayrone.
They don't. I think if you're looking for an ambassador of Green Bay Packers football, Jayrone Elliott is the perfect embodiment of that. A guy that came here very humble beginnings from Cleveland, makes the team as an undrafted free agent, and has become a really core role player on special teams and made some plays for this defense as well at times. Just a really self-made man who last year was really motivated. Sam Berrington was the nominee last year for the Packers Man of the Year.
That's right.
He challenged his teammates in his speech to get out in the community, be active, and Jayrone took that to heart, and he really did. I mean, if you talk about any kind of Tuesday thing that seems to be going on in the community, he's right there. I mean, the tailgate tour he was on this past summer, he always is putting himself out there, and just a wonderful personality, a guy that you legitimately can sit down with and talk about anything for like an hour.
Yeah, and kind of fitting, actually, that this nomination comes out this week with the Packers playing the Seahawks, because if there's one game that was probably the biggest game of Elliott's career, it was against the Seahawks last year at Lambeau Field. He had an interception and a forced fumble in the fourth quarter that helped seal the victory for Green Bay. And he's a fun guy to talk to. He's got his roots in Ohio, was extremely excited when the Cleveland Cavaliers won the NBA championship, and then was equally as devastated when his Cleveland Indians couldn't quite pull off the World Series championship. But a heck of a guy, and congratulations to Jayrone.
Yeah, and you talk about someone that you want out in the community and you want, you know, talking with schools and kind of, you know, talking about what the Packer way is like. Jayrone is the guy to do that, and I think he's done a really good job of grabbing that flag and really carrying it for the Packers. And certainly when you look at the 32 teams in the NFL, I don't think I could find anyone more deserving than Jayrone Elliott to take this thing all the way to the Super Bowl.
All right, that sounds good to me. We'll call that a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. You can find the team account at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.